To have a film made about yourself is an incredible privilege and honor, and particularly at an unsure time of life. I can't explain. I've been so used to being the caretaker of other people's stories and cherishing their moments of resistance. And when Joyce proposed this, my first thing was, look, I don't want you to make a morality tale out of it. It's not like things are hard and now they're wonderful, or once I was bad and now I'm good. That I wanted it to be a very complicated story. Two things is humility and great egotism. It's an incredible experience to have someone, Joyce would sit with me for hours asking me questions about my life. And at 61 or 60, I guess it was, you know, I had to revisit things. So I just feel, I'm frightened about November 14th at premiere. I don't know what it's going to feel like to sit in a darkened room with hundreds of people and watch, you know, myself up there. And all I can say is I'm incredibly grateful for the act of preservation. And what I'm really thrilled about is Mabel Hampton is there. I mean, it's images. My mother is there. My lovers are there. So I'm just incredibly grateful. I'd like to say that the freedom to be sexually expressive, the freedom to be different, is a freedom for all of us.
She has always had the ability to be on the cutting edge.
I still say, in our difference, we must join together to make our society a truly just one.
She didn't come out in her late 30s because there was now a movement, let's say, that was able to encourage her. She came out because that's just who she was.
As I think back to a lot of other people who are or were divas in our communities at the time, and people who you try to access in one way or another as a role model or just to sort of pick their brain or whatever, of all of them, Joan was probably the most available and accessible person.
Joan Nessel has been a major player in the development of a world that many of the 20-year-olds that I encounter absolutely take for granted and think came to them without effort or people's hard work.
Backlash, and I think what's important for me is not assimilation. I'm someone who believes, one, I choose to be the way I am. I was not born this way. I want civil rights on the basis and dignity of choice. And I don't want to be like everybody else. I love making love to women.
Joan's wonderfully outrageous, and I think it's great. I mean, I think it, again, and it pushes boundaries that way. And you know, she's saying, here I am.
I've mostly known of Joan. I've seen her at the archives. I've read her work. And I didn't really come to know her until I suggested to her that we make this film, because I felt that for her as an icon in the community and somebody who has been very important to the community for so long, that she would be a good subject. But I didn't really come to know her personally until we started to make the film.
In preparing my life for Joyce to make this film, which is what I had to do, like take out all my old photographs and my mother's scribbled notes and things, I had to, as I said, take another journey. And I think what amazed me about it, and all of this can sound a little arrogant, but is a certain kind of consistency that I was, I mean, I could see myself as a young girl again. I can't say there were moments when I said, oh my God, I didn't realize this. But there was this sense that lives are threads. I mean, it's an old Greek concept, but that we do weave patterns. And there is a sense of trying to stay true to a pattern that seems to be on the side of life. And so I kept looking, and I'd also came in touch with women I'd loved who had died or I still love. So when I went back to the Bronx for the first time and saw it was a vibrant living community the way it had always been, and that was a wonderful moment for me. So I think the whole attempt to re-piece things together was really an exceptional experience. Okay, here's my street. I was born in 1940 in the Bronx, New York. I was born to Regina Nessel. My father, Jonas Nessel, died in 1939. I was born May 12, 1940. So I never saw him in his body or touched his body or heard his voice. This is actually the only picture I have of my father. You can see him. This is Jonas. And this is like the mother I really didn't get to know. She was on her way to being a young Jewish wife with her husband Jonas. And then his death, his sudden death, destroyed all that. That was my address, 3508 King's College Place. And we lived on the fourth floor. I remember that tile on the floor. I remember that elevator. It's unbelievable how much has not changed. Okay. Only difference is I can't get in now.
It's important to me to document the lives of older lesbian activists because these are the people that that I grew up with, grew up as a conscious person in the world, and that these are the women who have made my life better and made all of our lives better by making it possible to exist in the world in our own terms.
I met Joan when we were both active in the Gay Academic Union, and there was a women's group that got going, but we ended up in the same CR group.
And we started talking about how much was happening in lesbian cultural production. But then, I call us the old-timers, remembered that there had been much lesbian cultural life before the 70s, even before the 60s, and yet we had no place to really have tangible evidence of this. And out of this discussion came what was to really, besides teaching and perhaps sexual desire, became the main thrust of my life, which was a lesbian history archives. When I came out in the 50s, I was called a freak by the doctors, and I believed it. And it took me to the 60s when I saw other people's liberation movements to work out something that, wait a minute, maybe I'm not a freak. And it was really women's liberation that said, as a woman, I have the dignity of my desire. So I was lucky enough to always follow the next wave of voices saying, we won't accept the social position you've put us in. And that helped me to piece together a life, my teaching, I mean, to be a consistent life of trying to find what gives so-called powerless people the urgency and the beauty of their lives. And to me, a very big way of it was the ability to say no. This is one of the most well-known working-class lesbian bars. It had the same awning, and it was called the Sea Colony. The police came in regularly. Women would be pushed up against these walls, and there would be a raid. Women would be taken out and pushed up against these walls and physically molested. Policemen would put their hands in their pants and say, oh, you think you're a man? Let's see what you got here. Or there'd be guys hanging out. But still, it was a feeling of safety when we got here. Once we went through them, I think it's the same doors, the heavy wooden doors. It was filled with the mixture of atmospheres of those 50 bars where sexuality, danger, humiliation, and courage.
Filmmaking is a visual medium. How do you take all of the content and the meaning and the profundity of what she has to say and to be able to make a story, bring out of that a story that is, you know, a compelling story that has a trajectory where you can have a storyline that you're following with certain ideas that you're following, and at the same time find those visual things that are of interest that will complement what it is that she has to say, because she has written what it is that she has to say.
Sexuality and the expression of the erotic has always been central to me, because it was, if you don't have a lot of money and you don't have a lot of social position, you don't have a lot of family, one thing you do have is your body. And that, of course, has been both the plight and the survival mechanism of many women over human history. But because I was a woman who sought out the touch of other women in the 50s, I learned that I had to risk everything for touch. And I really, that has been a guiding, that has been a motivating force in my life. There's nothing I prize as much as touch. Loving, passionate, challenging, strong, penetrative touch. And it often led me places where women were not supposed to go. And so I learned that, boy, not only can women go to those places, but they can shape them in their own way. I'm thinking of the sex bars of the 70s and 80s, and the bars I went to in the 50s where, you know, when the streets make the streets safe for women. And I have to say, what enters here is class. So much of this film is about, that sex is about for me. It is about class. It is about ethnicities. It is about aging. It is about loneliness. And I love the word penetration, which got me into a lot of trouble in the 70s. But I think penetration, I think the act of taking in as a femwoman is, to me, incredibly life-connecting and an incredible generosity. Sex, to me, always meant generosity.
And it was at that conference where a representative of Women Against Pornography came up to me and said, and these were her exact words, "Joan, if you're writing about Butch Femme in the past, we'll let you do it, but if you're writing about it now, you're on our enemy list." And I just looked this woman in the face, and another big part of my life, as I've talked about, has been my House on American Activities Committee activity, and also my whole sense of what McCarthyism was. And I just looked at her and I thought to myself, you don't know to whom you're speaking if you think that's going to scare me.
When A Restricted Country came out, and the English department, not the Sikh department, but the real English department at Queen's College, just, they always gave parties if a professor wrote a book. So they gave this little reading for me. Five people came out of like 55. But some were my students. And it's the first time I had ever read sexually explicit things. And some people listening to this may still think this is wrong to do, to my college students. I mean, they were there. And I started by saying, apologizing to them if it offended them. And my students, all five of them, so that was, there were like three professors and five students, came up to me afterwards, and one of them said to me, "Joan, I'm going to have to do this. Never teach us out of shame." So, you know, there's these wonders that come from writing about sex, but there, it's also very hard territory to claim.
I love where she's playing with the car, you know, this video game, where she's playing with a car that you see her laughing. And when Joan speaks in such a wonderful way and such profundities, people don't see the spontaneous kid, this joyful, playful, fun-loving person. They don't see that. They think of her only as being deeply serious and deeply connected to universal truths, and they don't see that puckish quality. And so those moments were like jewels that we sought out to bring to the film, because they are visual and it has the spontaneity and the joy that is part of Joan too.
I sit here, or I sit facing you alone, or facing the camera alone, but I never could have made this journey alone. And women in my life, like Deborah Adel, who co-founded the Lesbian Archives, have been supreme lifelines for me. And my present lover, Diane Otto, all the way from Australia. I mean, how we got together is a whole story, but who just took my scarred body, my old scarred body and my newly scarred body, and just laid her hands on me and said, "Together we will get through this, and together we will journey to all new places." She has always taken me, both geographically and intellectually and emotionally, to new places. And at 61, that's an incredible gift. I could never have done any of this without the love of other women.